Thanks to smartphones, almost everybody these days is carrying a little video camera around in their pocket pretty much all the time. But the next time a stranger films you in public, you might not be able to tell that they're recording at all.
In fact, their camera might look just like an ordinary pair of glasses. After years of tech industry experiments, smart glasses with embedded cameras and microphones have finally gone mainstream. And, disturbingly, sometimes it's not just their owners who are watching what these devices record. I'm Hudson Hongo.
And I'm Jason Kelly. This is Effector from the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Later, I'll be quizzing Jason on some of this week's most surprising headlines.
And we'll also let you know about some upcoming opportunities to connect with EFF.
But first, we'll be taking a closer look at the privacy implications of Meta Ray-Bans, the smart glasses from the makers of Facebook, designed to be worn everywhere, always.
So specifically what we're talking about today is Meta Ray-Bans, which, as far as I can tell, are the first device of this kind, the kind of smart glass world, smart glasses, to really get any interest outside of tech enthusiast circles.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to totally overstate how popular these are, but Meta has reportedly sold millions of them. And it seems like lots of people are using them kind of like a GoPro, but less obtrusive, if that makes sense. It's like a head-mounted camera, and you can use it to capture really immersive footage, like POV stuff, whether you're like extreme sports person going down a mountain bike trail. And I think a big one is influencers filming themselves going out to a fancy meal of some kind.
So some really obvious use cases that aren't that different from a GoPro. But because they're so unobtrusive, you have some more disturbing uses, at least a little bit more disturbing, like a apparently, Homeland Security agents have been spotted wearing these glasses during some of the Trump administration's mass deportation raids.
Yeah. I mean, people just sort of spotted these on the Homeland Security agents. They recognized them as these devices. Sort of tellingly, this is also another place where people have used GoPros. Like, you can also see the Homeland Security agents with a GoPro on the helmet. No, I'll tell you. I do want to ask you, Jason, have you seen these things out in the wild yourself?
I have not. And, you know, the point you make about the difference between a GoPro and a basically sunglasses is that you really do have a hard time seeing them. I live in San Francisco, so I've probably passed by people with them, but I have not seen them. Have you?
Well, I have a really clever way of evading various kinds of visual surveillance, which is barely ever leaving my house. So... It's possible I've run into them, but like I try to keep my risk low.
Yeah, I think you're safe enough doing a podcast at least until we start posting more videos. But what I'm interested in is hearing the conversation you had with Thorin. Tell me more about that.
Well, like you said, I talked to our colleague Thorin Klosowski, who's a security and privacy activist here at EFF. The other week, he wrote a great blog post about this titled, Think Twice Before Buying or Using Meta's Ray-Bans. And as you might expect, there's a lot to unpack here when it comes to privacy, civil liberties implications, and these devices. So, like you said, I talked to Thorin to dive deeper. Let's listen to that conversation. Well, hi, Thorin. Thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
So today we're talking about smart glasses and privacy, specifically those made by Facebook's parent company, Meta. For those who haven't encountered them, what are these devices?
Yeah, so they're basically a pair of eyeglasses that have cameras in them, and some of them have additional like AI or AR features. The two kind of primary companies that make them are Oakley and, more famously, Ray-Ban.
Right, so they're like a pair of glasses that have a camera embedded and the microphone embedded, right?
Correct. Yeah, the cameras are on the like arm side. So there's two cameras and they're on each side of the arm. So it kind of looks like you are, like if you encounter them in the wild, you feel like you're kind of like staring at like a 90s raver a little bit.
And unlike some of the similar devices like this we've seen over the years, these are actually pretty popular. I think I saw they sold something like 7 million of these last year.
Yeah, they were They've been out for a while, and they kind of were, I wouldn't say floundering, but they were kind of like on the outside. They were sort of a niche product that kind of, you would encounter them occasionally in the real world, but they were rare. And then, yeah, last year they just exploded and started selling like a lot more than I think anyone was expecting. And like to the point where I have seen them out in public many times.
And as I understand it, being able to tell if they're recording is a fairly subtle visual cue, right? It's like just a little light on the nose pad or something.
It's yeah, and it kind of depends on the context of when you encounter them. It is a light, and it is pretty obvious if you're like indoors in a dark. Like I saw some at a conference one time. I've seen them in restaurants, and it's like you can tell they're recording. It's pretty clear. But outside, it's less so. Like I've seen the Oakleys like pretty frequently on bike trails here in Los Angeles. I have encountered them, and you definitely do not know unless you are like really looking for it.
A little more subtle than like a GoPro strapped to your forehead.
Yeah, or holding a camera, or your phone for that matter.
So there was a pretty alarming report in a Stockholm newspaper recently, Svenska Dagbladet, I think, about AI annotators in Kenya viewing footage from these Meta Ray-Bans. What did these newspapers find?
They found exactly that. And so a lot of the footage that gets triggered when you use the AI features gets sent to kind of like check to see, you know, ostensibly like what if the footage is like recording properly or what's in it, like if the AI is doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's very common with a lot of AI products. But in this case, it includes all sorts of very personal information, like including nudity, sex, going to the bathroom, kind of all of the things that you would expect to be either intentionally or accidentally recorded whenever you have cameras mounted to your face all day long.
Yeah, so I mean, fundamentally what this means is that the footage that people are recording on these things is not private, right?
It's very difficult to keep track of where it is at any point in the process. Like, so the stuff that's like sent for this AI annotation or, you know, checking to make sure it's like working properly, all of that kind of stuff is, you don't really have like a ton of control over it. None of it's like end-to-end encrypted. So none of it's like kept completely off of any company servers. So it's very difficult to like know where it is at any point as a consumer. And on top of that, it's also saved like by default to your camera roll. So if you're storing that in cloud storage, it's also going there. It just can be everywhere if you aren't very vigilant about like where you're storing it. And there's no way to kind of like keep it entirely just on the glasses or just locally.
Right. You wrote a blog post that was about this, among other things. And this was one of the big points you had. I liked how you put it. I think you said something like, if you use these smart glasses, you're likely not the only person who can see and hear what you record.
Yeah, like any other kind of footage like this, it can kind of just end up everywhere. And there's not a lot of technical barriers to stopping that with the sorts of encryption that we tend to use for storing photos, with some exceptions.
The videos are being used for AI training, and we know at least in some cases this goes to human review. The recorded audio is also being saved by default. Kind of pretty troubling.
And the recorded audio is very similar to the kind of things that people are used to, like Siri or Alexa. So it kind of works like that. It's similar to that, but it is like a lot of audio. It can include accidental triggers. It, you know, kind of the same issues that kind of exist with a lot of smart speakers and smart assistants like that exist here too. But again, it's a new product. It's strapped to your face. You have it like they're designed to be worn all of the time. So you're just interacting with it more, and there's probably likely far more initiating it unintentionally, I would imagine.
I'm glad you brought up like how these are used differently, because I did want to ask, you mentioned in your blog post also about the general invasiveness about the kind of filming that these devices do. How is recording with these devices different from, say, recording something with your smartphone?
I mean, they're really just designed to be invisible. That's the biggest difference. They are closer to the sort of spy glasses you would imagine in an 80s comic book than they are like a camera that you are holding and intentionally recording something. And I think for everyone else involved, it's just uncomfortable to realize often far after the fact that you've had a camera recording you for who knows how long.
Getting back to write these use cases, I know you also shared some specific privacy tips for people who already have smart glasses like these and are using them. Can you share some of those tips?
Yeah, I think, I mean, the biggest one for me is, you know, it's not like the technology is inherently bad, but I do think that, like, thinking through a lot of these concerns and deciding how you want to use them can really kind of help make it a better experience for everybody. So if you're skydiving and you want a first person view of that, then like stick to that. And I just think that like kind of sticking to your use case and why you find these things interesting and like using it for that, like you would any other camera, is kind of a good sort of baseline to start with. But there's other things, like you can opt out of some of the sharing with Meta. It's kind of unclear to me exactly what the opt-outs are really doing, if it's like not sending footage for review at all. Meta doesn't do a great job of describing the result of the opt-out process beyond offering it. So I'm not totally sure like how much protection that would grant you, but it's worth turning off the sharing anyway, I think.
Yeah. Right. Ideally, everything would be privacy by default, and instead we get this opt-out regime. And at the very least, you should look in your settings and try to opt out of these things if you care about your privacy at all.
Yes, absolutely.
So we've been talking about Meta's smart glasses because, like we said earlier, these are the ones that have really kind of broken through last year. But other companies are exploring this product area now, right?
It seems to be, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of smaller companies that make these that I don't know that much about. But the kind of big ones like Google and Apple do seem interested, at least. Google has announced a partnership with Warby Parker, so they are working on something. We don't know if it'll be cameras. We don't know if it'll be like an AI, AR screen sort of thing. There have been rumors about Apple for years with this kind of stuff. Who knows where that'll go, if it'll happen. And then, of course, Snapchat has had a very similar product for quite a long time. It didn't get, like, again, like, those kind of came out, and I think there were people concerned about it, but it just didn't have the social staying power that we've seen with the Ray-Ban specifically.
So all of this kind of points to the same thing, which is that these are devices that are asking us to effectively put even more trust in tech giants that have a pretty poor record when it comes to rewarding that trust, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can imagine a kind of different alternate reality where maybe a product like this existed that was kept locally. You know, you could store it directly on your phone. It could be useful for filming, you know, law enforcement actions. Like, there's like another alternate world where this could be happening, and maybe there will be competing products that kind of take this stuff into account. But yeah, you're putting a lot of trust into a company that has not done a lot to earn that trust over the years.
Right. You take the footage, it goes somewhere where it's seen by who knows, and then it almost feels like you're in retrospect allowed access. Like, oh yeah, you can have it too.
Yeah, I mean, there's an argument that like a lot of this is just for training AI, and a lot of the reason that Meta might want access to that footage is because of that, which again would be nice to kind of have better controls over how that works and what your information is used for, if that's the case.
So to me, I mean, this just feels like part of a fairly troubling decade-long trend now of tech giants selling consumer surveillance devices with inadequate privacy protections. We're like in year 11 or so of Alexa, right? And I know you watch this space closely. Like I said, I find this to be a troubling trend. Are there any more encouraging trends that you've seen?
No, not particularly. There is increasingly, I think, an awareness of how these companies are interacting with these devices and when and where we can kind of like take control of them and ownership of them is starting to bubble up more than I have seen in the last 10 years. So I think there is a small, tiny sliver of hope that we can maybe see in that.
Yeah, I think awareness is some of the most encouraging stuff I've seen recently. I was surprised and in some ways delighted by the reaction to the Ring Super Bowl ad that suddenly people are thinking like, oh, right, these like consumer surveillance devices, it matters what is being done with this footage, this data.
Yeah, I think there is an angle of stories that are being told right now using surveillance as how they're kind of looking at the world in general, in a way that we have not seen in the past quite as deeply. And I think that that is helping bring awareness slowly but surely to the kind of implications of a lot of this stuff.
Well, Thorin, thanks again for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you think, Jason? I personally get what people find neat about these devices, but I'm not sure how else to put it. There's just like, this is a very meta implementation execution of this kind of device.
Yeah, there were some things I learned from that conversation with Thorin and from the blog post that do scream Mark Zuckerberg. For example, the fact that you have to use basically the Meta AI app to use the glasses, or at least to use a lot of the features in them, which isn't a huge surprise, but that's the same app that they want you to install to sort of replace Gemini, Google's AI app, right? So they're sort of forcing you to use their technology, if you will. And the way those two things are separated in the app, I downloaded it just to check, there's like a tab for all the AI questions and AI stuff you want to do. And then there's a tab for the glasses. And maybe you just never use the other tab if you don't want to. I'm not sure. But we'll talk a little bit more about the other meta-like parts of this story. Just to hone in on something, which is the popularity, Thorin mentioned that they really blew up, and I am not as surprised now that I've learned a little bit more about them. The main things that I think have brought them to the public are that they have an in-lens display now, which was introduced in 2025, and you can finally wear these kinds of glasses without being a glass hole, in the sense that people can't tell. You're able to look at something and have it give you directions, which is a cool new feature in many ways, right? The biggest issue with Google Glass was that they looked ridiculous, and Facebook's don't look ridiculous, right? They look like Ray-Ban Wayfarers, which have been popular glasses for a long time. That was really interesting to me, just like, what exactly did make them so popular when everybody hated Google Glass just, 12 years ago? What else about the sort of meta-ness of these worries you in the ways that meta should always worry us?
Well, it's just like, there's a way that we're familiar with using cameras of all kinds, right? Whether it is like a video camera, a phone camera, or a GoPro. Oh, I like press record and then the thing has recorded it and that's where it is, right? Like a GoPro.
Yes, on the device.
Like, yeah, right. A GoPro, like a traditional digital camera, it's like there. It's like on a drive there. And this entire thing seems to be built around, oh, you record it and then it goes somewhere, right?
Somewhere. Yeah. And there's no clear mechanisms, meaning you might be able to change some defaults and change some settings, but even the language that they're using makes it hard for the average person to understand who can see the footage, where the footage lives. And if you want to just record the footage and leave it without getting it transferred somewhere weird, it seems like you're probably going to have to go back in time and buy the older ones, because now they're really focusing on the AI part and really focusing on the move it to the cloud part.
Yeah. And I feel like that's actually the part that's disturbingly unobtrusive, even less so than its appearance, right? Certainly now they're less obvious, right? If you encounter one in the wild, but I feel like even more obscured is the fact that like you don't really know where these recordings are going. I mean, you're old enough, Jason, I assume, that you remember taking like a roll of film to the drugstore to get developed.
Yeah. I've tried to get into film photography as an older person and done it recently. So yeah, absolutely.
And if there was like something you took a photograph of that you didn't want someone else to see, it was pretty simple, which was you just did not hand them the roll of film.
That's, you know? Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The changes, you know, I've been thinking about these devices and this shift a little bit the way that we've thought about Ring cameras, and people have come to sort of understand that it's really cool to have a camera on the front of your house to see who's there and whether or not your packages have arrived and things like that. And also people have come to understand that that video or photo can go to a lot of places that you don't expect it to. And so, you know, there's the double-edged concern here that you've really pointed out, which is they're unobtrusive to the person that might be being recorded or people, and the ways that the data is handled is extremely vague and hard to change.
And like Thorin mentioned, you can imagine an alternative universe where these devices follow something closer to our traditional relationship with recording devices we own, where it's like, oh yeah, obviously it's your Ring doorbell. We're going to encrypt it all by default, and it's going to be saved locally somewhere for your personal access, not as like part of a network of eyes on your community.
Yeah. I mean, this is probably going to be something that we see a lot of different types of products in the sort of smart glasses field, some of which are going to have, you know, the problems that Meta often has and the push and money behind them that Meta often has, and others that maybe let you do all kinds of things with your videos and your photos, and also see cool things in the display and don't have the same problems that Meta has, right? I mean, you can have plenty of different doorbell cameras that aren't Ring cameras now, but it's probably going to be a while. And so probably a lot of people are going to start with these if they're interested in the market. And that could be a problem for sure.
Well, like we said, before you get one of these, think about all this stuff. If you have one, try to consider these concerns. You can read even more on EFF.org.
So I know you have a quiz for me, and I'm very excited about this, but I didn't think it was fair that you came up with a quiz for me and I didn't have one for you. So I kind of surprised you here. I know you don't know what, you didn't expect this, but I have a quick smart glasses related quiz. So Let's see how well you do with the smart glasses field. Here, three quick questions. Starting with, what was the first name of Meta's smart glasses? When they first released them, what were they actually called? It's not good. You're not going to be able to know it. Either you know it or you will never come up with it because it's so bad.
I'm going to go with Through a Meta Lens Darkly.
I think that might have sold better than Ray-Ban Stories, which is what they were initially called. Meta's Ray-Ban Stories smart glasses, because the time that they were released, they were really pushing, you know, sort of stories on Instagram, and that was the way I think they expected people to use them. But it's not really a good name for a product, and I think, obviously, as the product has improved, so have their naming devices.
It does sound a bit like a failed HBO program from the 80s.
Ray-Ban Stories. Yes. Yeah. Early David Duchovny work. Okay, question number two. We're moving away from Facebook for a second because everyone is familiar with Google Glass, but are you familiar with any of these potentially real or fake Google projects that are also related to smart glasses? I'm going to name several, and you tell me if any of these are not real. Google Goggles, Google Cardboard, Google Daydream, Google Contact Lenses, and Project Iris.
Okay, Google Cardboard sounds incredibly real. I just have full faith. I don't know if I read a headline, but that's just as like 100%, I believe in that. Google Goggles, I can't weigh in. It's really on the line between stupidly stupid and stupidly real. Google Contact Lenses is bad branding, which maybe that's just how they were reported on, but I'm going to go with that one as fake.
Okay, so out of goggles, cardboard daydream, contact lenses, and Project Iris.
Yeah.
All of them are real. Okay. Every one of those is a thing that Google did, most of which didn't have much of an impact or weren't fully released, were really just prototyped. Google Goggles is actually an app. It's an image recognition app, not smart glasses. Cardboard is a foldable cardboard headset that they released in 2014 that you put your phone into. Daydream was a headset that they actually produced made of plastic that you put your phone into. Contact lenses were an attempt to recognize glucose levels in tears for patients who might need insulin or people who might be diabetic. Unclear if they were ever really used, and there was some uncertainty about whether that would actually function. And Project Iris was a AR headset that would have been like ordinary glasses. And speaking of, when was the last year that Google stopped selling Google Glass? That's my final question for you. We know that it came out in around 2012, was released in 2013, flopped miserably in 2014. When did they stop selling them?
Oh my God. I mean, I was sort of a tech reporter at this time, and I'm trying to remember the entire timeline, but I feel like they did like continue selling them surprisingly. This might be crazy. Is it 2018?
If only. Wouldn't that make sense? You would think that they would have stopped selling them in 2018. You could still buy Google Glass in 2023.
No.
Isn't that
no way.
Crazy? Yeah, you could. Unclear why anyone would. They kind of made them into an enterprise level product focusing on commercial applications, but for some reason they kept selling them or trying to until 2023, and then finally gave up.
I feel like that's like the longest a Google product has been supported is 10 years.
Especially a failed one. Yes, yeah, right. That's right. Yeah,
right.
That's very
funny.
That's
incredible.
All right. Those are my questions for you. Now it's my turn.
Well, I thought I was going to be debuting an interesting new segment, but we've now already had, this is our, I suppose, second new segment. Jason, I'm going to ask you about some of this week's wildest headlines. Each round, I'm going to give you two headlines, one real, one fake. Or maybe one sadly real, one sadly plausible. Are you prepared?
Okay, so out of each two, one is actually a headline and one is not. Are these headlines verbatim or are these just stories that
these
you've
are headlines.
Sort of written? Okay.
And maybe
okay,
maybe they've been lightly edited for obfuscation.
I understand. Okay.
And you will get a grade at the end. First one, first headline choice. Witness was being coached via smart glasses, judge says, or Yahoo Smart Hat draws criticism from neural privacy experts.
Oh, gosh. Surely the first one is real. Yahoo doesn't have technology anymore. This is, you started me off with an easy one, right?
Yeah. Well, I just okay. I liked the phrase Yahoo Smart Hat. But the,
in a different world.
Yeah. That it was the first one. This is a recent case. A judge ruled, this is in the UK, that a witness, their testimony was unreliable because it became fairly clear during a cross-examination that they were being fed answers via smart glasses. It wasn't like a bot. It seems like they were on a phone call with somebody who was providing coached responses to the cross-examination.
And that's not legal. Huh.
Yeah, right.
I wonder why. Okay, good start. Good start.
All right. Now you have to choose between these two. Pentagon quietly deletes all references to women from website, or White House registers aliens.gov domain name.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm going to... And you're sure both of those aren't real. Okay. I think the first one is fake because it's so absurd. It's like too broad, although it is how this administration feels like they're often operating. I haven't tried aliens.gov and I really want to. And so let me just open aliens.gov and figure out, okay, that site didn't work, but it doesn't mean that it's not real. What's the answer here?
So you were correct. Aliens.gov is the real one. I mean, the reason why you can tell is that one's like, I don't know how you can tell. What am I saying? Obviously, both of them are like incredibly disturbing.
Both of them are. Yes, yeah. Both of them could be the case, but the first one would be, I'm fine with them registering aliens.gov. I think that's fantastic. I do have a monetary interest in this government not reporting that there are aliens this year. That was a bet okay. you could make on one of the betting sites, and I said, you know what? I don't think they're going to do it. And so I do have a $5 bet that... So this is hurtful that they did register this to me. I could potentially be out $5 separately from this quiz.
Well, I was like, and here's what's really unfortunate is that it's not just a silly story. There is an EFFE angle here, right? Which is that they registered this after the president said they were going to release more information about what the government knows about
right.
extraterrestrial life, unidentified aerial phenomena, these things. And it just like... Unfortunately, this like shows the kind of transparency our current
yes.
administration likes, right? Which is just like, oh, like crazy, chaotic info dumps that are not like appropriately vetted or redacted,
yes.
right? We saw this with their JFK stuff, with the Epstein stuff. Meanwhile, when it comes to complying with the Freedom of Information Act, like all across the government, they've claimed that they can't comply with these requests because they're short so many staffers. So like legitimate, like important newsy transparency requests, nothing. Giant dump of just whatever files we have lying around. We love it.
As much as I would love to learn more at aliens.gov, you're absolutely right. The important requests are the ones that involve scandals, cover-ups, the public interacting with ICE, things like that. That's what we're not getting. But instead, we get an aliens.gov website, which, to be clear, doesn't load.
not yet. Not yet.
Not yet.
It's like, I don't even want to get into it, but the outlets that have asked about it have gotten the response of stay tuned from the White House.
Ah, yes. Okay. Well, I hear that a lot from them. All right. Number three, I'm doing good.
You're 2 for 2 for now. All right. Third one. CEO asks ChatGPT how to void $250 million contract, loses terribly in court, or $250 million Kalshi profit on Avatar Oscar raises insider trading questions.
I just want to point out that the place I'm betting on aliens.gov is not Kalshi. Okay. These are both very possible. The numbers, you've done an interesting thing there. I'm going to say that the most EFFE one is real. The one that most impacts digital rights. And I think that's the first one. I think the first one is real.
You are correct. That is the
yes!
real one.
Okay. Okay. And this was a CEO who attempted to use AI to what now?
So this is related to the video game Subnautica 2, right? And the relationship between the developers and like another company that has ownership in the release of this game. And in any case, the developers were eligible for like a very large bonus under the terms of the contract between these two entities. And the CEO apparently didn't want to pay it out. This is from court filings and a ruling that happened the other week. Asked their legal team how to avoid paying this out. Legal team said, it's in the contract. We're just going to have to do it. He was not satisfied with that. So he turned to
turned
to ChatGPT.
He turned to AI.
Right, which initially also told them like, oh, don't do this. This is also a bad idea. But eventually was able to coax out a game plan to try to avoid this payout. And this is an ongoing case, but the latest was the judge ruled that the developer had to be reinstated in the job that they were dismissed from. It's an incredibly messy situation, but it does show that I especially if you like have a legal team, definitely trust them over the chatbot.
I think that's a great idea as an employee of a legal firm. I think that is a really smart approach. Okay, number four. Wait, yes, number four. So I'm 3 for 3.
You're 3 for 3. That's it. And I promised
you. Oh, I got them all?
Yeah.
Yeah! Okay. What does that mean? What do I win?
Well, you win a title, which is you and anyone else who is listening and got 3 for 3, you are awarded the title of certified doom scroller.
Okay. Did you come up with titles for the other ranks? Because
I did.
I bet they're pretty good. Okay, let's hear them.
Well, I just, you know, for people listening home, if you got 0 out of 3, you're sadly just a news loser. Wow. 1 out of 3, habitual grass toucher. And
probably good.
2 out of 3 is a classic very online.
Makes sense. I have reached the level of above very online. Oh, yikes. That was a really fun time. I hope we can do that again in the future, given that I'm filling in for Christian while he's out. So that was the best part of my week so far. It is Monday morning.
Well, now it's time for events and opportunities. Jason, how can people connect with EFF in the weeks to come?
Well, there are some very good EFF events and opportunities coming up. First, Cindy Cohn, EFF's executive director, is continuing her book tour around Privacy's Defender, which is doing very well and getting a lot of positive attention. She's been visiting a bunch of different places and doing talks. And this book is kind of her personal chronicle of standing up to the Justice Department, taking on the NSA, entangling with the FBI to protect our digital rights at EFF, and there are a lot of really interesting cases in there that she's been involved with. And next, she'll be at Harvard Bookstore in Cambridge, Mass. On March 24th. So if you are over in the Massachusetts area, March 24th, get a nice visit with Cindy. On April 1st and 2nd, you can catch EFF at CypherCon. That's a conference in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and we're presenting one of the keynotes, and we'll have a membership table so you can stop by, get your burning digital rights questions answered, maybe grab some merch and donate to support us, given that we are a nonprofit and we are member supported. You can learn more about these events and other things that you can go to or other ways to see EFF in person at eff.org/events. And lastly, the opportunity that you mentioned. EFF is hiring a donor operations specialist to support our development team's fundraising operations and our use of Microsoft Dynamics 365. This is a hybrid position based in San Francisco. Learn more about this job and other opportunities at eff.org/about/opportunities.
Thanks, Jason. Well, that's it for this week's Effector. Effector is a podcast by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the leading nonprofit defending online civil liberties. Our theme music is I Dunno by Grapes.
EFF promotes digital innovation, defends free speech, fights illegal surveillance, and protects rights and freedoms for all. Become an EFF member today at eff.org/podfan. That's eff.org/podfan.